I, Charles IV, or is it the third? Bloody
pain. We will strive for the detoxification of the
Let me put it to you.
Can't grow concrete.
Yes, you
if
can.
You win by one, oh, you've won.
The phone went over the side of the
phone. It is time to draw it up.
I just think everyone should be sure.
What the fuck is going on?
Hello, I'm Mark Steele. Welcome to my podcast, where each week I ask the question, what the fuck is going on?
What the fuck is going on?
A Conservative Party donor, Frank Hester, apparently said that looking at Diane Abbott made him want to hate all black women and she should be shot. And then one of the ministers of the government went on the radio to explain this wasn't about her race or her gender. And you can see his point, because in what way can the phrase black women have referred to her race or her gender? When he said black women, he was probably talking about her height or her singing ability or how far she can go in a canoe. But the Liberal Brigade looked for any opportunity to be offended as usual. He probably wasn't even thinking about black women when he said black women. He'd have been thinking about Polish mice or vintage cars. Someone called Martin Watson sent me a message on Twitter that says, I imagine he'll say, I meant the New Zealand women's rugby team, the All Black women. He hasn't got the imagination even for that. Rishi Sunak has said that the donor, Frank Hester, was being racist, but he's apologised and accepted he was racist, so we should all move on, which might be a fair point, except Hester hasn't said it was racist. But instead of quibbling about what it is that he's accepted, we should accept that he's accepted something and not make a fuss about whether it's accepted it was or wasn't racist and congratulate him for his acceptance. Minister Graham Stewart said he disagreed with the comments but warned against cancelling anyone who has ever said anything. And that's a good point, because once you decide to not accept money from someone for saying looking at Diane Abbott makes me want to hate all black women, she should be shot, the next inevitable step is to cancel anyone who has ever said anything. Within a few minutes, we'll have sacked Alex Jones from the BBC for saying good evening and welcome to the One Show. We'll arrest primary school teachers for saying please pick up your litter. Where will it end? Now, many of these people who complain about Frank Hester's comments have said things themselves. Keir Starmer, for example, was heard just this morning to say, I don't know how long this rain will last. But no one calls for him to give money back to anyone, do they? He's a hypocrite. Also, Frank Hester's life must be really complicated and we should feel for him. Because when he says, I'll be at the meeting at 10, this has nothing at all to do with meetings or 10. And he must forever be answering the door to pizza delivery companies saying, what are you doing here? When I rang and ordered an American hot pepperoni thick crust with extra mushrooms, that in no way referred to pepperonis or crusts or pizzas or mushrooms.
What the fuck is going on?
The Oscars ceremony this week rewarded the atom bomb film Oppenheimer over the Barbie film that only won one award. And this is one of the many subjects that's been addressed since his return as MP by our very own George Galloway.
Let me put it to you, Oscars. Your profound ignorance of celluloid acumen is matched only by your willfully duplicitous criteria for selecting supposedly worthy recipients of your increasingly meaningless trophies awarded for vapid mendacity and parsimonious mundanity. For it was the majestic and poignant Barbie that illuminated the insipid cinematic mediocrity of Hollywood, rather than the full, reflective, somnambulist dreariness of Oppenheimer. For the imperious Miss Robbie extenuated her gargantuan talents to convey how the iconic doll fought tirelessly against the imperialist imagery of her epoch. Her association with Ken, without doubt, a reference to the illustrious personage of Mr. Ken Livingstone, while the colour of her outfit symbolised the glorious pink revolution of the Kyrgyzstanian masses to overthrow the ruthless dictatorship. And her catchphrase, "You can be anything," was without doubt a cry of defiance that meant believe in yourself and you shall become MP for Rochdale. That, Oscars, is why I did not attend your wretched jamboree of an awards ceremony. And furthermore, it remains beyond comprehension that your prize for best film overlooked my own work concerning the triumph of the wheat harvest in revolutionary Venezuela, which I recorded on my iPhone. Now, we all know that it's not possible. I've tried. It's not possible to work out what the fuck is going on without expert advice. And we have someone who's actually bothered to try and change people's minds. Is that worth it? Mr. John O'Farrell.
Hello, Mark. How are you, mate?
Well, I'm all right. As I've said for many months, I'm all right apart from the cancer.
Oh, God. Lighten up a bit. It's like, God, it's supposed to be a comedy podcast, Mark. Oh, cancer this, cancer that.
You didn't get Eric Morton going on about cancer, did you? He just got on with it and told jokes and wiggled his glasses.
These alternative comedians have to talk about their health and their well-being. I don't know what I'm an expert on, Mark. You've got me on as an expert. I'm an expert on...
You're an expert on worrying about whether Labour can still lose elections, even when it is impossible for them to do so mathematically.
Yeah, well, we're all scarred. We're all scarred by those past defeats.
Yes, absolutely. I was talking to someone, who was it, a couple of days ago, who said... Oh, no, it was yesterday, actually. Who said that they remembered... They're much younger than me or us. And they said, just 2015, that was such a worry. We thought that Ed Miliband was going to win, and now you can't help thinking, oh, God, could something like that still happen? I don't think it is possible for Labour to lose this.
Yeah, I mean, every once in a generation, you get a proper sea change in what the British people are feeling. And 1979 was that. It's like there's nothing Callaghan could do to save that election after the winter of discontent. There was nothing. Yeah, yeah. There was nothing after Black Wednesday that John Major could do to turn that around. And the polls were like 20 points after that. Same with Gordon Brown after the financial crash and his decision not to call an election. And I feel like we're at that point again after Liz Truss's budget. Actually, it was that was a real moment. They'd been 10 points behind up till then, and ever since then they've been 20 points behind. I think the British people, who aren't that interested in the day-to-day politics, sort of out the corner of their eyes saw that. They saw their mortgages go up and go, I'm done with this lot, and nothing they can say or do now will change that, I think.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, the analogy I've been using is a comic that's just lost the audience and no one's listening and doesn't matter what joke they tell.
Yeah.
And they've gone. And it's, there's so many things like that. Someone just making a speech and no one's interested.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, whether, and all of us, we look at all the polls.
Yeah.
But most people aren't looking at all that. They've just made their mind up. And there's a load of people that think the Tories have already gone.
Yeah.
And have forgotten they haven't had the election yet.
Yeah, so there's, I mean, you know, there's talk about replacing Sunak. I think that would just make people think, oh, what are they doing now? Oh, God, haven't they gone yet? So none of that would work.
But this is my point, right? So the great Jeremy Hardy, I remember speaking to him the day after Brexit, and he agreed it was awful. But he said, there's a bit of me that feels a little bit the same as if someone said, imagine if someone let all the animals out of the zoo. You know that would be very bad to have a rhino wandering up and down the street. But it would be funny.
Yeah, except in that metaphor, all the rhinos and cheetahs and tigers have been elected MPs in the north of England now. they're all been made deputy chairman of the Tory party and are then resigning and joining Reform or whatever it's called. So,
joining a real proper Wildcats party.
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't have to hide the fact that it chews people up in their kitchen.
Yeah. Sometimes people who can't be bothered to really get into politics go, oh, just shake it all up a bit or smash it all up. And, you know, it's like, it doesn't work like that. And see what emerges out of the rubble. Nothing emerges out of rubble. Bindweed emerges out of rubble.
Yes. Yeah. Well, another line of Jeremy's, I remember him saying, these people, the floating vote, he said, I just can't work out the floating vote. And they go, well, for a change, we thought we'd give Golden Dawn a go.
Exactly. Or the other one is
for people who don't know, they were the Greek fascists. Yeah, but
the other one is local. It's like, oh well, normally I support. I've always thought I'd agree with the principles and philosophy of Voltaire because he's from round here, you know. But then I found that Tommy Robinson lives in Station Road, so I'm voting for him. You know,
because he understands the local people.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, a lot of the local people, he understands them really well because he's caved their head in with a spanner. So someone that loans you a local area.
Yeah, exactly. I can't understand why 1 in 5 people still think the Conservatives should form the next government of the United Kingdom. I mean, that's insane. Who are these people?
Well, it must just be tribal loyalty, mustn't it? It must be like, you know, you've supported Fulham when they've been shit. Yes. I've supported Crystal Palace when they... I remember losing to Crewe. I didn't then... You know, I still supported them because it was...
Yeah, and I supported Labour under... Michael Foote, Tony Blair, Jeremy Corbyn, Keir Starmer. So that is very different leaders and very different versions of the Labour Party. And I would always advocate for them. So that's very different. Yeah, I'm very tribal about that. So, yeah, I understand that. But still, 1 in 5.
I wonder whether... Is this just being sort of wishful? I don't know. I think there's two reasons why it could get worse for them. One is that if the Reform Party looks slightly credible, which of course they are, absolutely dreadful, you know, and Lee Anderson and people like that, just no logical thought. Leave aside the politics, they were just mad. There was not, you know, with someone like Lee Anderson, there's not a single, you could say any word to him and he would say, so you could say the word tree, there are now no trees left in Britain because the woke arati have just destroyed them. They think that now you're not allowed to have a branch unless you've got someone that used to be a brick and it just identifies as a branch, and I'm sick of it.
Give us our trees back. Yeah. There are no leaves
There's
on trees the
trees. Everywhere. Shut up.
They've taken all the leaves off the trees. It's called autumn, mate. It's what happens every year.
There were no autumns during the Second World War because the British people wouldn't allow it.
The other thing I love about all this is that those people go on about the Second World War, but they weren't. They were born 25, 30 years after, and it's still their defining sort of foundation myth. It's not like, you know, it's one thing for my dad to talk about the Second World War because he fought for all 6 years of it. But for people who are now 55 to go on about, all they've done is watch Dad's Army a lot. That's their experience of the Second World War. Yes. They watched LOLO and Guns of Navarone.
The British people stood in the hall in Warmington-on-Sea.
Yes.
And now, that what must they think when they look around now?
And now there are women around. There were no women in Dad's army, apart from that lady with the fox fur.
And Pike's mum.
Pike's mum. And now we've got a same number of women as men, and it's gone too far.
Only this morning, I went to my local market and saw no fewer than 11 women.
Oh dear.
Supposing the Reform Party, which is possible, they got a certain amount of credibility, sounds like a stupid word, but they sort of won over a number of the people who are currently voting Conservative. Yeah. It's not inconceivable, I think, that the polls could change a bit. So the Tories went down to 15% and Reform were on like 15%, which would be... And then if you add into the fact that I think there's probably a lot of tactical voting that will happen. So, you know, obviously there's a poll that says Jeremy Hunt is likely to lose his seat.
Oh, no.
Already. It's because the Liberals and Labour voters will... They will work it out somehow.
Isn't
it?
Yeah. Yeah, we could have a Canada situation. Do you remember that election in Canada when the Conservatives got about 1 or 2 seats in the whole country? And it'd be so great to have 2 Tory MPs so they can have a leadership contest.
2 Tory MPs.
And they'd have to keep voting. One against the other. And they'd be going, well, I nominate me. Well, I nominate me. Well, have you got a seconder? What would they do?
And it'd be like brilliant. Michael Gove. I would hope that Michael Gove was still one of the two remaining ones, and he'd be on there going, on election night, going, well, it certainly is not a satisfactory event, and the result is certainly bad, but I think some of the polls predicted that we would only be down to one, so...
It's as positive. And then he'd stand for leader, and then he'd stab himself in the back just before the announcement. we probably think it won't happen, but it's good fun entertaining that possibility. And what would happen after that? Would the Tories fade away like the Liberals did after the Second World War, First World War? Or, you know, would we have Labour in power for a decade or two? Would the Liberals become the opposition? Or it'll be interesting.
No, I don't think that would happen, because I think the Conservatives are so embedded into British society. So if you sort of go out to mid-Surrey or whatever, they might have lost some people, but they would still have their Conservative association. They would still have people who had been donors, who would be local landowners or whatever. I don't know. But it is possible, because we are, I think, one of the only countries in it that's escaped the business of a new right-wing party getting 20% of the vote.
That's because the Conservative turned into that party with Boris Johnson and Suella Perez.
So that that's possible. And the electoral system.
And Brexit sort of did that to us. It was like, what the fuck, you know? So I don't know what's going to happen in the next election. I think it's, I think Reform are probably polling hard and they'll really get, all it is people pissed off with the Tories. If you remember, when Blair got in 97, it was like, oh, hey, Labour, the Tories have been wiped out. What could possibly go wrong? And then what's this little party that damaged the Tories? The Referendum Party. What's that about? Oh, they want a referendum on the European Union?
Oh, well, yeah, I forgot them.
That's never going to happen.
But Goldsmith.
This little seed of poison was planted in the minds of the right-wingers.
It ended up
holding sway, you know, 20 years later.
James Goldsmith, who I subsequently found out 15 years or so after that, was a very close confidant of my natural father. That's another thing that I
saw that great
that's
show.
That's another thing that I wasn't aware of on that night. See him, who's caused the Tories all this trouble.
Yeah, he's a mate.
My dad was best mates with him.
That's insane. and Lord Lucan.
Lord Lucan, who sadly wasn't able to stand for election.
You're going to do that show again, Mark? I thought that was a great show.
Oh, I might do. Yeah, thanks. No, thank you very much. I think I will. Well, I found out lots of things subsequently since that. Yeah. Now, but talking of shows and books.
Yeah.
So you are you have penned one of each in recent times.
I've got two musicals.
Well, the book's not out yet, is it?
No, it will be, because this goes out sort of, in mid-March. So I am published on the 14th of March is Family Politics, which is my new novel about... a left-wing couple, but myself and Jackie, or, you know, like many of the people you know, our age. Adult son moves back home from university to live back home again. He's come back from Oxford. He goes, Mum, Dad, I've got something to tell you. And they think, that's fine, darling, if you're gay or trans, you know, we're very tolerant. We're very open-minded. So, no, it's not that. I'm a conservative. And they're like, no, you're not. No, you're just doing that to rebel against us. No, you're just being contrary. And they have to live with this Tory in their household as a sort of metaphor for Britain today, in this very divided political world that we live in. It's a comedy, of course, but it got reviewed by a Tory MP in House magazine today, who gave it a very good review. So I'm slightly worried about that. But the character in it, the lead character, the dad in it, is called Eddie Hughes. And so they got Eddie Hughes MP to review it, which is a bit surreal. But yeah, they found an MP with the same name as my main character. And he's given it a nice review. So yeah, that's my book, Mark. You must come to the launch if you're feeling up to it.
I absolutely will. And I did read a section of it where she sneaks into a Conservative meeting, goes in disguise.
Yes. So that's the sort of thing my mum would disguise herself as a Conservative, put on a big blue floppy hat and sit at the back while her son is giving a speech to the local Conservative Association. And
it was great. It was a great little bit, because she sort of she misjudges what she thinks the Conservative clientele will be, and that it's much more sort of normal.
Yes. Exactly. She goes along as a posh Margaret Thatcher going, oh, do help yourself to the Chablis. Ah, blah, blah, blah. And of course, they're going, I beg your pardon. They're just normal people, which is like completely outrageous behaviour by the Conservatives to not be, you know, parodies of Bullingdon Club Boris types. So the whole thing is an education on both sides, I suppose. What it isn't, Mark, is a book that says they're all as bad as each other, because that is not what I'm saying. I'm not saying they've just got to sort it out. So it's just saying that we can have a debate without
us. Like that. They're all as bad as each other, politicians.
Oh, God,
Nelson Mandela, Hitler, they're all as bad as each other.
Why can't they just sort it out? I mean, the Israelis say one thing and Palestinians, they need to get in there and knock some heads together and sort it out. Yeah, that's not what I'm saying. So I've got a book out and I've got a show, Mark. I think the other thing I'm going to do the segue for you. I've got a musical.
Yes, I walked past it just yesterday in Waterloo.
That's what we're asking people to do. Just walk past it. That's great. And,
that did sound terrible.
Shout in the direction of the box office. That looks good. Anything like that.
I've written a review about it. It says every bit as good as Eddie Hughes' review about your book. Right. While perusing through London, I walked straight past them. What a wonderful sight it was to see that there was something or other going on there. Well done, Mr. O'Farrell.
Oh, dear. It's been a long old journey. I've written a book, a music, for those people who are listening who don't know what we're talking about, I've written Just for One Day at the Old Vic, which has got about another 2 weeks to run. And it's a musical about Live Aid. So it's all the songs from Live Aid, or not all of them, a selection of the songs from Live Aid, telling the story of putting on that incredible concert, dealing with some of the tricky political issues and the journey of Bob Geldof and various other people who are involved with it.
Oh, what was the trickiest political issue?
Well, there's lots of them, actually. But I think I always had a beef about how white and male the lineup was. But also there was the issue of the notion of top-down aid from Europe to Africa as a short-term solution, but one that sort of perpetuates a sort of model of the image of a broken Africa that is put into European minds. So I've got to do all that and then go, and now Vienna. Do you know what I mean? So that's the tricky bit, is, you know, naturally segueing into those songs, but also just dealing lightly and briefly with some of those tricky political points.
How was Bob Geldof then?
He's the most agreeable, polite man you could possibly imagine. I'm slightly nervous about saying this to you, but would it be okay if this wasn't the line here that my character says? I don't want to offend anyone. The thing is, the whole theatre world is full of people going to dancers or something, I love the way that you made a choice there of not dancing in step. It would be really lovely if we could just try as an experiment to dance in step. And then Bob comes into this world and goes, that's fucking shite. This is, John's script is bollocks. Fucking whole thing is shite. This set is bollocks and you're shit. And it's like, no one can cope with him. You know, and everyone's like, he's the rudest man I've ever met. But he was always, his agenda was always to make the show good and always to make it a better piece of theatre, not to make him good or make him look great. And he was up for being slagged off and being attacked in the piece. So I got to grow quite fond of him, despite the vitriol that was poured on my head during the creative process.
That would be quite fun.
Yeah. It was incredible. It's an exercise in diplomacy as well as writing, I suppose, the whole thing, you know.
Right. Well, this is marvellous. So, just so, there's still a couple of weeks to go before this, and there's all the songs. That's the main thing, isn't it?
We'll hope to get a West End transfer for Just for One Day. It's going to do.
So let me have a guess. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, right. Let me have a guess. Right. Don't tell us. So, right. Obvious. So, who's represented? Queen.
Yep. We don't do it. The whole show is done without any lookalikes or without any sort of stars in their eyes.
Right.
It's done with the ensemble are singing the songs, or characters from the show are singing the songs. No one is coming up and they go, and now tonight, Matthew, I'm going to be David Bowie. There's none of that. So it's a good show. There's a big documentary about it on YouTube you can watch called Against All Odds. And that was a that was a great reminder of the whole thing. But it's been quite a challenge to set those things to music. Everyone thinks I just write the lines between the songs, but purposing the songs for the storytelling, that was the biggest challenge, you know, to take message in a bottle and go, okay, how does this move my story forward with my characters, you know?
So does it have to be a message in a bottle?
That's right. He's there going, what's this come along? Oh, it's a bottle here. There's a message in it. What can we sing now? I'm brilliant at this, I tell you. I've just got a gift for it.
Sting went down to the seaside one day. Oh, Trudy, have a look at this.
Hey, there's a bottle washed up.
I can't read it. It's all run. Oh, the ink's all run in the water.
You said you hadn't seen it. You clearly have.
Thank you so much, Sir Faye. I think we're a long way further towards finding out what the fuck is going on.
I've not convinced myself, but thank you for having me on anyway.
If you would like to hear more of that interview with John, then you can join us on Patreon, where there is an extended version available. Extended! And it is indeed thanks to our wonderful, beautiful, virtuous, radiant, sexually enticing Patreon supporters that we can continue our quest to find out what the fuck is going on. Just follow the link on our Twitter page or search for Patreon What the F, and for as little as £2 a month to insignificant pounds a month, you will get early access to ad-free versions of the regular episodes, or to find out in an advanced sense what is going on for just £4 a month, you will get a longer ad-free version of the episode with extended versions of the guest interviews, extra Elliot, and you'll get bonus sketches. For example, this week there is the much-awaited return of Nadine Boris. All our Patreon supporters get the episodes on Friday nights, unlike everybody else who has to wait until Saturday mornings, often not even surviving to the morning because just all sorts of, they take all sorts of chemicals and it does them terrible damage because they just can't cope. And so search Patreon What the F to join the WTF community. The royal family has been caught up in a terrible controversy concerning a photoshopped image of Kate Middleton and her children. And we're lucky that we could get a longer perspective on this issue from somebody who's been a close confidant of the royals for over 60 years, Lieutenant Colonel Sir Ambrose Chislehurst Adobe. Well, all this recent tomfoolery concerning photoshopping and Kate Middleton, the family and hands or whatever, I mean, it rather puts me in mind of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth, who was the most extraordinary photoshopper that the world has ever seen. Oh, my goodness. I mean, everywhere, for example, 1953, the coronation, do you know she wasn't even there? She just drew herself in. She just set about it with, I don't know, the primitive photoshopping gadgetry that one had in those days. Took it down to Boots, as one had to. She couldn't be bothered to go, you see. She felt that it was rather more important that with a forthcoming race at Cheltenham that she trained one of her horses, which was, she was particularly, had aspirations to, to do well. And so that's what she did. And, you know, a word went around, and in no time at all manner of dignitaries around the world were asking her to sort of do the same for them, you know, Eisenhower and such people, Mao Zedong. And then one day she was just frolicking on her horse up there, and she was at Balmoral, and she rode past Loch Ness, and she took a picture, and she thought it would be rather jolly japes to just pencil in a monster. Fooled the world. Just drew it with a black felt pen. Whole world, there was, believed that this humongous beast was frolicking amongst the waves, and she just made the whole thing up. Didn't think another thing of it. Just went straight from there to have a banquet with the exiled king of Romania. What a remarkable lady she was. It has come to that time of the week when you will all, podcastees, lay down prostrate upon the floor and wait for the announcements. All of the nervous energy over the last few moments as you've been waiting, the things you can and can't do, whether or not you need to take extra special care because it's slippy outside or because it's extra dry or to take particular care over the forthcoming days of March, because it's windy and it can be windy in March. So please, please, please take care of the extra wind. Do not lose 8 or 9 stone in the morning before you go out in case you blow away. Things like that. Be very, very careful as well that in a couple of weeks, the clocks are going to go round. Be really careful not to go out an hour earlier or later or whatever way it works. You know, I don't really understand it, but just please, please take care, all of you. And whatever happens, if you're in the front carriage out of carriages 1 to 8 that at certain places doesn't stop right over the platform, don't just blindly get out and fall off a bridge. Now, some of my announcements are that I've got so Mark Steele's in Town is going to come back onto the Radio 4 on June the 24th, and that's a little bit terrifying because I've got to write and record and research and all the other things that you do before the programmes can go out. That's all going to happen, but assuming I manage to do all that, it'll be out on June the 24th. Otherwise, it'll be a repeat of Round the Horn from 1904. Also, people have been getting in touch with us, as ever, on our Patreon account, as well as on Twitter, wanting to know what the fuck is going on with certain things. Stewie, who's very concise and easy to remember name on Twitter, at Stuart, capital S, 34779380. Oh, that's triggered me a little bit, Stuart, because that looks like the sort of, what a parking fine number normally is that I have to get about 25 a day of, then I have to ring up and pay. Says, can you say anything you like if you chuck the government 10 million quid? Well, I think we should try that this week, Stuart. Maybe we should try it between ourselves. I think we should ring the government and say, we would like to give you 10 million quid, and presumably the Treasurer or Rishi Sunak, whoever deals with these things, will go, marvellous, yes, I'm very glad that someone at least still continues to support us. But then I would like to say, but does that mean it's all right if in a few years' time it emerges that at a meeting I said, you know, Prince William, he loves to have wasps shoved up his arse. What, stinging, really nasty stinging wasps. The later in the year, the better, you know, when they're really all angry and that, and it's September, and they're really stingy. Right up the arse. That's William for you. Will it be all right? Because what I want to know, if I give you 10 million quid in a few years' time, I hope you know, to throw me under any bus, you need to be able to say, yes, I know that Mr. Steele said that Prince William loves to have stingy wasps shoved up his arse, but that doesn't in any way suggest that he thinks that this is a subject concerning William or wasps or his arse. And then someone else can say, Mr. Steele has accepted that the comments were inappropriate, even though I haven't said anything of the sort. I've said I'm absolutely adamant that he does like wasps up his arse. And then various ministers have to come out and say, Mr. Steele has apologised, even if I haven't. And after all, we can't live in a world where we get cancelled for absolutely everything, can we? And will you do that? As long as you do that, you can have the 10 million quid. I think we should give it a go, Stuart. Irem Fazal. I hope I've pronounced that right, Irem, if I've pronounced Irem right. In saying that, I hope I've pronounced your name right. One of our Patreon supporters says, scientists have discovered that worms in the area of the Chernobyl nuclear disaster have developed superpowers. They're resistant to radiation. Now, first of all, I'm going to take issue with that. That's not a superpower. That is a normal part of the evolutionary processes. Now, I would think it would be probable that in a local change of environment, as Darwin described it, which would be the places covered in radiation from a nuclear disaster, that a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of the worms in the area would have had sort of little bits of individual sort of differentiation between the others of the species, and that would make them a little bit sort of immune to radiation, and those would be the ones that would survive, and so they would pass on their genes, and now you would have a new species of worm that is quite happy living in an area of a nuclear disaster. And these are the things that are going to take charge of us when the world's ended. So we need to be kind to these worms. If superpowers are the order of the day, says Iram, ignoring my intervention, what superpower would you want if you were to risk exposure to radiation fallout? Right now, the superpower I would fancy would be the ability to eat a slice of toast in less than 1.25 hours, which is what it takes me at the moment, because I have to swig each crumb down with about 1.5 gallons of water because I've got no saliva. Saliva! Who'd have thought shitty saliva would be important? Because superpowers are all, they're all relative, aren't they? If you were a bird, you wouldn't go, oh, the superpower I'd want would be one that meant that I could fly. Because even the shittiest bird, you know, well, apart from, you know, emus and stuff, can go, well, that's not a superpower. We've got that. But a superpower to them would be able to spend Saturday morning just sat on the settee watching reruns of The Darts, going, fucking hell, Luke Littler's got another 9 darter. That would be a superpower to them. To us, that makes you really quite a long way down, but a place that I'm more than happy to inhabit. There we are. That's The Dialectics of Superpower, which was, I think, written by Hegel originally. And finally, at Touchwoods83 sent us this tweet, which they spotted, for which I'm very grateful. It says, I'm getting really sick of this country. £170 million goes to keep Muslims safe. What about our safety? We pay taxes in this country. Starting to think now, why we bother? Government obviously and blatantly don't care about us. It's time we stop paying them. And they added, I'm sick of it, Jeremy, sick of it. Absolutely, absolutely. I think we know who was writing that tweet, don't we? What the fuck is going on? As everybody knows, it's not possible to work out what on earth the fuck is going on without expert advice from the younger generation. And we have someone who is about 27 years and a half, a little bit more than that, possibly, Mr. Elliot Steele. Hello.
Hello.
Youth can go up as well as down.
You all right?
Yeah.
You don't think my bet's going to come in?
No, what are you doing? You're betting on the horses now. See,
So Jamie Hutchinson, a very funny comedian.
Right.
Put his tips out for Cheltenham. I morally disagree with horse racing. I think horse racing is barbaric and they kill the horses and the way they treat it is awful. But I morally disagree with a lot of things, but and I don't really do anything about them either, as I sit here on my iPhone that had a 7-year-old mine the lithium that's being used in it. You know, I don't agree with that, but they've made it now, haven't they? So what am I going to do?
Well, the horses haven't raced yet. In this race that you're betting on.
Yeah.
It's different.
But it, you know, it, what am I to do here? Like, yeah, I disagree with it, but also it does seem like it could be fun. And that's where I think it's Carl Jung once said, if you want a tree to go to heaven, it's got to have roots that go to hell.
Right. So that justifies everything then.
Well, I mean, you know, it can do. If the worst thing you do is bet on the horses in life, you've led a good life, I think.
Yeah, but that quote, that could be some lunatic in the middle of bloody Georgia who's gone berserk in a shopping mall. And then when asked why he'd murdered 23 random people, he said, well, if you won't go to heaven, the roots go to hell.
Yeah.
He will be electrocuted on March the 31st.
Yeah, but, you know, I think that's, you know, the only thing that's getting shot here potentially is my horse. And that's not that bad. Like, if we think about all the things that are going to be shot today, a horse isn't that big a deal. I don't think.
I think.
There's
a better defense of your bet now. I'm going to make your defense for you. Your horse won't be shot. The horses that are shot, the Grand National is one because the fences are so high, and it is sort of right. said, well, that's the excitement of the Grand National is that the horses are so high and stuff. But most years there is one or two horses that end up, you know, having to be put down. That won't happen. I don't. What race are you betting on? Unless it's some illegal thing that takes place at the back of Farningham Woods in Swanley, which is quite possible.
It's like total wipeout for horses. They have to jump across loads of spongy balls. And there's no water to break the fall. It's just barbed wire. It's horrific. It's horrible. It shouldn't happen.
They then have to run past a load of Swanley 9-year-olds with air guns.
With Cheltenham, I'm set to win. And yeah. I was told by Jamie, no, you're meant to bet on them coming each way. But I told him that's a loser's attitude and I've put them all to win.
What? How many?
One, two, three, four, five horses.
Right.
I'll win £351,000.
Right. So all these horses, are they all sort of like 15, 20 to 1?
Yeah, one of them's 25 to 1.
Right. Well, the chances of that winning are considerably worse than 25 to 1, which is why the bookies have it at 25 to 1. And that's just that one.
Yeah, that. So I think, look, I need to be in a positive mindset going into this that you're not giving. And that,
my 25 to 1 horse isn't going to win if my dad
it's pretty astounding
doesn't
that
think it
even,
is.
There's not even 25 horses in this race.
No, I know,
five.
But they're not all equal. That's why it's 25 to 1.
What if you've got eight horses. They're fucking horses. What do you mean they're not equal? They're horses.
Well, because it's in the same way that if you've got a 100 metres race,
yeah,
and there are eight athletes in it, and one of them is Dina Asher-Smith, and the other one is my mum, who is 99, that doesn't mean they've both got a 50% chance, does it?
No, okay. So you're starting to make a bit of sense, and I think I'm not winning this £351,000.
One of the horses will be particularly adept over this distance, and they'll have just studied the ground and go, oh, it's soft going because it's been raining this week. I know all this shit because my dad used to study all this, and as is said about people like
my
dad.
I've got his genetics. I mean, you weren't technically related.
No, I wasn't related to him at all.
No, but I think that's been passed on to me. It skips a generation.
And my dad was one of the people about whom it is said he can tell you all the reasons why his horse is going to win, right up until the point he could tell you all the reasons why it didn't win. And right. Did he
win a lot of money gambling? Because I read a lot of people do. But this is the thing. There's a lot of winners when it comes to gambling.
You'll find there's less than there are losers.
Yeah, but that's because you've got to remember some people are unlucky. Some people are unlucky. that's what happens.
And that was why he got thrown out of Gamblers Anonymous.
some of you are just unlucky. Not me, I'm lucky. I'm one of the ones who win. I can feel it. I can feel it in my bones.
Oh,
I'm going to
win
this.
Do you know what I can feel? What I can feel is a conversation over some point in the next 10 years where you explain to me why I no longer own this house.
And why you own a bigger one? Because I gambled it and it worked. Look, there's people listening to this who will have had a gambling problem and they'll be horrified and upset at what I'm saying now. But they'll also be listening to this people who had a gambling solution.
Which was to bet on the right horse.
And they bet on the right things. And their story needs to be told as well. We're just focusing on the negatives now. Society just wants you to focus on the negatives, I think. We in this country don't like winners.
Right.
And that's if I was the Prime Minister, how much in debt are we? What, like 6 trillion or something?
Oh, I thought you meant us.
No. The
country.
The country.
Well, we're sort of in debt, but it's not debt, is it? It's like having a mortgage. You're not in debt. You've got a house that is partly owned by the bank, so you're not really in debt.
But what I'd do is I'd take all like the money we made off the Iraq War,
right?
And I'd go, we're putting that on John McGinn to get a yellow card this weekend. He's back.
That would work this week.
He picked up a red card last weekend. So you put John McGinn, yellow card.
Well, he won't be playing. He'll be suspended.
No. But in a few weeks when the Prem's back, Casemiro, yellow card, certainty. Casemiro, John McGinn. And then we're halfway out of debt. Imagine being the nation that got out of debt because John McGinn and Casemiro got a yellow card.
What if there was an investigation, though, and they thought John McGinn was in on it and...
We don't let him know. We can't, as a country, let John... Look, you come out as a prime minister and you go, I've got some news. Everyone's tax money this year went on John McGinn and Casemiro getting a yellow card. And it happened. And so next year, you guys don't have to pay any tax. Just keep the money. We're good for a little bit. And then they'll go, we're going to take some of the money we won and we're going to stick that on a... We're going to put that on Harry Kane, top goal scorer at the Euros. And England to win, you know. We'll see what happens there. That's a bit of a risky bet.
That's much more risky. See, that'd be terrifying. Yeah. That scares me.
Yeah, when they're lining up for that penalty shootout in the final, going, "Hey, not only have you let the nation down, but we get repossessed by Paddy Power. Like the whole country, I've effectively lost England to the Irish.
Paddy Power now runs Britain.
We have, after years of trying to invade Ireland and break up the union there, we are now, they haven't just got all of Northern Ireland back. They've got all of England as well. They now own all of us.
And that's how 800 years of the Irish problem was finally solved. Thank you very much. And that's why you should be on at the end of these Ray Winston things.
Look,
instead of it going, when the fun stops, stop. Instead of that going, but all that self-loathing is worth it when you win.
Gamble aware, but also have a few beers and have fun with it. Doing anything aware sucks the joy out of it. That's the point of gambling. It's not meant to be done with awareness. That's for the fucking nerds with the mathematics. Follow your instinct.
Thank you very much for that message, and let's take all of that into our hearts. Elliot Steele. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you've liked it, rate it, and if you can be bothered, write a review. If you can't be bothered, write a review that is about 4 miles long in the Sahara Desert with a digger, a big JCB, not some little tiddly thing. If there is anything at all that you think I should be finding out what the fuck is going on with it, please send me a message on Twitter at WTFisGoingOnPod, at WTFisGoingOnPod, and we will look at every message that you send. If you would like to become a WTF supporter for as little as £2 a month and get early access to ad-free, if you can believe such a thing, and extended versions, please visit our Patreon page. What the Fuck Is Going On was hosted by me, Mark Steele, with my guests, John O'Farrell and Elliot Steele. Voices by Sarah Alexander. It was written by Mark Steele and Pete Sinclair. The music was by Woody Dowling. It was produced by Mike Penwin at Carousel Studios. And What the Fuck Is Going On was brought to you by WTF Productions.